From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. What a program in store for you tonight. We will play this hour the interview with the attorney for the family of alleged time traveler John Teeter. Many of you didn't have an opportunity to hear it Friday when we played it in the wee hours. We will be doing that and getting reaction from the person who puts up the John Teeter website, Oliver Williams, so get ready for that. Next hour, Nicholas Ryder, our guest, a man who became a paranormal researcher. We're going ghost hunting tonight on Coast to Coast. As I was driving into work earlier, I saw someone who was at the corner of an intersection with a sign that says, "Please give me any of your loose change." Now, sometimes when I see people walking the streets like that, I throw them a dollar or two. In this case, I did not do anything because while the person was holding the sign, he also had a cell phone in his other hand. I can't believe that. Here's some of the stories of the day. In a story we continue to follow, executives at Dubai Ports World are intensifying now a public relations effort this week as lawmakers ratchet up protests against the Bush administration over allowing the United Arab Emirates' own firm to run six U.S. ports. The government in Dubai will lobby port officials along the East Coast, and the DP World's chief operating officer, an American shipping executive, is expected to travel to Washington this week for meetings on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. Big push here. Michael Seymour, the president of the North American arm of the Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company. Now, that's the company that the DP Ports World plans to buy and then run these six ports. Well, he says, hey, this is no big deal. This is a good company. They've worked with a lot of people before. Lawmakers are upset that P&O, which runs 100 ports in 19 countries, is being purchased by DP World and the approval of the U.S. Committee on Foreign Investment here in the United States, a 12-member panel chaired by Treasury Secretary John Snow and comprised of members of the Departments of State, Defense, Justice, Commerce, and Homeland Security, all said, okay, let's do this. P&O currently runs commercial operations in the ports of New York, New Jersey, New Orleans, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Miami. I'll have more on this story this week. Osama bin Laden promised never to be captured alive and declared that the United States had resorted to the same repressive tactics used by Saddam Hussein. This according to an audio tape purportedly by the al-Qaeda leader that was posted Monday on a militant website. The tape appeared to be a complete version of the one that was first broadcast January 19th on Al Jazeera, the pan-Arab satellite channel, in which bin Laden offered the United States a long-term truce, but also said his al-Qaeda terror network would soon launch a fresh attack on American soil. This is what he says also. I've sworn to only live free. Even if I find bitter the taste of death, I don't want to die humiliated or deceived. That Osama bin Laden in Milwaukee, saying the nation is on the verge of technological breakthroughs that would startle most Americans, President Bush outlined his energy proposals to help wean the country off foreign oil. Less than half the crude oil used by refineries is produced in the United States, while 60% comes from foreign nations. Bush said all this during his first stop on a two-day trip to talk about energy. He says some of these foreign suppliers have unstable governments that have fundamental differences with America. It creates a national security issue. One of Bush's proposals would expand research into smaller, longer-lasting batteries for electric gas hybrid cars, including plug-ins. He also wants to build more nuclear power plants. In Fatima, Portugal, tens of thousands of Christian pilgrims braved cold and rainy weather on Sunday to pay their final respects to the last of three shepherd children who said they had seen the Virgin Mary in Portugal in 1917. Sister Lucia, the last of the three, died a year ago, and on Sunday her remains were moved to her last resting place in the Shrine of Fatima, where they saw visions of the Virgin, which have become some of the most important in the Catholic Church. A great broadcaster is dead tonight, Kurt Gowdy. He had that smooth voice of sports history, a welcome companion who brought listeners Ted Williams' last home run, the first Super Bowl, and dozens of other dramatic moments. Kurt Gowdy died at his home in Palm Beach. He was 86 years old. He died of leukemia. After a seven-year wait, scientists have finally been able to analyze the cometary and stellar dust particles captured by the NASA Stardust spacecraft. Researchers performed preliminary analysis on particles from six of Stardust's 132 collectors, Already, they are finding many of the same materials and samples from the comet Vilt 2 that they believe form the early stars, planets, and objects, and probably us. While the samples appear to lack indicators of water, they do contain sulfides, which they say is a key component to life. In Miami, a self-proclaimed psychic and fortune teller has pleaded guilty to bilking elderly clients in South Florida out of more than $2 million over an 8-year period. 57-year-old Linda Marks of Delray Beach was accused of preying on the elderly and people suffering from incurable diseases, telling them that she could cure them by praying over their money. And Sasquatch fever has struck Malaysia, where an animal protection group now claims to have scientific evidence to prove the existence of the legendary creature known as Bigfoot. The Johor Wildlife Protection Society said it has discovered an entire colony of the creature, which it is dubbed Orang Lenggor, which is called Lenggor people in the jungles. They say that they will make the evidence public soon. A spokesperson said that a member of the group spent 6 years studying the creatures and interacted directly with the colony. The adult creatures, they say, are between 10 and 12 feet tall, while their children are 6 to 7 footers. They say that 70% of them have human appearance, but the rest resemble apes. They like to eat fish and fruits and gather in the jungles. They did not disclose the location for fear that everyone else will go hunting them, and there are some crews there looking for them now, I am told. On the line with us is cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, an expert in the hunt for Bigfoot. Lauren, this story here, does it have much credence to you?
Well, I think one of the problems we have with it is if you've been seeing something for 6 years and you say you don't have any photographs, we're beginning to scratch our head.
Yeah, I think so.
And what we're hearing is more and more stories from Malaysia of three different types, and that's the latest breaking news today, is that there's supposedly three different types of these creatures. One that's 12 feet tall, another human-sized, and a smaller one about 3 feet tall. So the stories are getting pretty muddled.
How long do you think it's going to take before we can weed through all this, Lauren?
I think that as the spring comes, apparently the government's going to send in some government-sponsored expeditions, and then we're going to have some more details, and that'll be good.
Based on what you hear, do you think something's going on out there?
Oh, definitely. I think that one thing that may be happening is in these colonies that they may be orangutans. Orangutans are only supposed to be seen on Borneo and Sumatra in Indonesia. But I think what's going on is there may be some relic populations of orangutans still existing there in Malaysia, in addition to Bigfoot-type creatures. So those two types of animals being mixed up together is part of the problem.
Lauren, a bear, for example, when it stands up on its hind feet and it reaches up, how tall is that generally?
Oh, well, black bears, of course, could be, 5-6 feet tall, but the brown bears can be upwards of 8 to 10 feet, depending upon how big they are. The Kodiak bear would be huge if it would stand up. But in Malaysia, of course, they only have sun bears, which are a little bit shorter, and they just aren't known for standing up on their back legs that much.
I got to tell you, the most fascinating of everything that I've heard, too, in addition to what you've just said, is the fact that they said that 70% of these creatures have human appearances. That I find pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, I just wonder where, some people are saying they're 12 feet tall, and some people are saying they're man-sized. So there's the first sighting in November that really kicked off all of this was two creatures that were about 10 feet tall along with a smaller one. So one thing that we have to remember is that the young will look smaller.
Lauren, let's keep in touch on this one.
Okay, great.
Okay, it's a fascinating story. Thanks. That's cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. We turn to him whenever there's a big creature story, and this one appears to be a big one. Last Friday night, I played the interview with our interview with Larry Haber, the attorney for the family of alleged time traveler John Teeter. Well, in a moment, we're going to play that again for you and also talk with Oliver Williams, who heads up the John Teeter website, to get his reaction to this incredible story on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the name is John Teeter, and the supposed time traveler came here from the year 2036, started posting online. Oliver Williams began to assemble all that information and put it together on a website called johnteeter.com. Oliver's with us now. Hi, Oliver. How are you?
Hello, George. How are you doing?
Good to have you with us. Oliver, we're going to play a brief interview with Larry Haber, the attorney for the family representing alleged time traveler John Teeter. We'll play this interview, and then when it's done, we'll probably come back to the break, but we'll stay with you, take phone calls, and get your reaction to really this incredible interview. You ready to listen to it?
I'm looking forward to
it.
It's
Oliver Williams listening in with you on the Larry Haber interview. The John Teeter family story, it is incredible. Larry, can you tell us, first of all, your association with either John Teeter, the time traveler, or the family?
I was contacted by a friend of mine from law school a few years ago and said that he was looking for somebody that did some entertainment law work, which I do, and then explained to me the story that is probably pretty well known to the people that are listening right now. And I said, well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, and I don't believe it. He said, no, I'll give it a try. I really need some help with this thing. So I went ahead and took the couple of calls and have been involved with it for the last 3 years now.
Are you baffled, perplexed? It is indeed a strange story, is it not?
Baffled, perplexed, and everything in between, sure. I have no idea if any of this is real or not or true or not. I know that they believe it's real. The few times I've had direct contact with the family and the many times I've had it through my friend have led me to believe that these guys really think that everything they keep talking about is absolutely real, but I'm too far removed from it to really get a good handle on it.
Larry, have you met anybody face to face?
No, okay. I have not, except for my friend I haven't seen him in years, so I know the person that has made the contact with me, but not anybody from the family. Just a couple of phone conversations with John's mom, Kay, and that's all I've had.
Okay, but you still represent them, I assume.
I represent them, that's correct.
Okay, now I understand you have Kay on another line. She does not want to come on the program directly with her voice, but she will answer questions through you. So let me, first of all, ask you if Kay saw a John Teeter from the future John Teeter.
Okay, let me ask.
Has Kay seen John Teeter from the future?
She's telling me that when he left in March of 2001, she hasn't seen the older version of him since then.
Since then.
Correct.
Is there a smaller version of John Teeter? And if so, how old is he right now?
There is, and he's about to turn 8 years old.
About to turn 8 years old. Has the 8-year-old John Teeter met the adult John Teeter from the future?
I'm glad I'm asking her that. I couldn't answer any of these things. Hold on. They were together for the 3 years when John was here. The future John was here in the past, I should say. It gets a little confusing.
Did her future son talk to her at all about the family, how long they would live, or anything personal like that?
Kay was pretty insistent that she said that at the time she said, absolutely not. I don't want to know any details of the future because she was just spooked her. So, as far as I can tell from her right now, they have no idea about anything that took place in the future or will take place in the future.
Larry, how did you first come about and meet the John Teeter from the future? How did that all occur for her?
In April of 98, he visited them in Florida and stayed for a couple of months and came back in June and spent the next 3 years with them, but knew how to find him because obviously he knew where he was living back then.
Why did she believe this individual who would probably show up at their doorstep and say, hi, Mom, I'm John Teeter.
I'm John, right.
Yeah.
Good one, because, again, that's the biggest one for me to try to figure out. Hold on. Good question. She says, the first meeting, she knew it was him, but it took her about a day to really accept it or figure it out that it was real. Or that it really could be real. I don't think she still was convinced that quickly, but you know, she's telling me I'm trying to repeat the words. How can a mother not know her son, basically?
Even if he's much older.
Right, right.
Was she proud of him?
Basically terrified.
terrified of him. Why?
Terrified. I think it's for the same reason, not wanting to be on the phone now or get more involved than it, this way. Just when you get hit with something like that, she said, basically, I'm not that sophisticated a person, and to get hit with something like that, it was, you know, why would my son come back? What's wrong in the future? What's going to happen to us? What's going to happen to everybody? And so on. So it took her a while to get over the fear, you know, very afraid, very fearful, almost terrified, I think, from given the way her voice sounds.
Is she pretty well convinced that John went back to his own time era, or has he moved on to other time periods?
She doesn't personally believe he went anywhere else. He really didn't enjoy what he went to do the first time around, and she thinks that he probably would have stayed and not accepted going taking another assignment.
Okay, so if I understand you, she thinks that John Titor from the future is still here in our time period.
No, is in his current time frame in the future.
She went back.
Didn't do any more time traveling, right?
Okay.
And that's part of the reason why he probably hasn't been back here.
Understand. There is a book that is being sold now. It's called John Titor, A Time Traveler's Tale. It's a paperback. It's by John Titor. I assume is written by the mother. Do you, Larry, as the attorney, do you have anything to do with that? Do you represent them on that at all?
Just in terms of getting the publishing, I mean, I can tell you that all I was responsible for was to make sure that the copyrights were filed correctly. The thing's really incidental to it, but had no other involvement with the book itself.
Self-published, or is there a big publisher behind it?
Self-published.
Okay. Is there anything else on the horizon with regards to this John Titor story that you know of?
Well, I am aware of a movie. Kay had hired me, or actually continued to hire me, but asked me to... about a year ago, to take a look at making some type of video or film about the story, so that it would be more widely known than just what's out there now. And so, because I do entertainment work, I'm in Orlando and do work with a lot of video companies. One of those companies is working on a film. I have no idea what stage they're at. They told me that they've spent some time with some phone interviews, and they were going to put something together for release this year, but I haven't seen anything or really don't know much more about it other than that.
I'm sure the family wishes to remain somewhat anonymous, so they moved from Florida to someplace in the Midwest, I understand?
Nebraska, from what I understand, but that's just what they're telling me. I couldn't tell you if that's really where they're calling from. When they call me, it's no caller ID.
Okay, so she is relatively confidential still, I assume.
Correct, and wants to remain that way. That's the problem. I've probably only talked to her 3-4 times out of the whole couple of year period. And most of it is just through either emails or through a friend of mine that relays messages.
Well, there are a couple of possibilities, Larry, as you know, and as you mentioned at the outset. Either it is a true story that there is indeed time traveling going on in the future, and that some of these individuals, including John Titor, have come back into our time period to warn us about some events. Or this may be one of the most methodically thought out hoaxes I've ever heard of, in that most hoaxes occur and they go away. This thing, it seems to be well planned and well thought out as an event.
Yeah, and it's funny for me because I'm so incidental to it. I've got a full law practice and I do a whole bunch of other things, and I don't even have much time to spend on the internet to even look at it. And then when it pops up, I get all wrapped up in it again for a day or two, and then it goes away for a while, and then it comes back again.
It's
very, very interesting for me, too.
You may be the only attorney to represent a family or a time traveler from the future.
And I am very interested in the sciences and the possibility of that, so I keep going along, and hopefully I'll find out, too, someday.
You're not getting paid in $2,036, dollars, are you?
No. At least that part of it's current.
So
but again, I'm not doing a whole lot of work. That's why I don't really get that involved with it on a day-to-day basis. It's usually just some quick questions, or how do we clear this, or do you know somebody that can produce this kind of thing. So I really do very minimal work. My involvement with stuff like this, an interview, and even I got interviewed for a documentary that was out that was produced last year. That takes up a lot more of the time than anything I've ever billed for, but it's been fun.
In your entire law practice career, is this got to be one of the strangest cases you've ever had?
This is the best. That's why I enjoy doing it. It's absolutely fun.
So, Oliver, when we come back, let's get your reaction to this interview, okay?
You got it, George.
Oliver Williams heads up the johnteeter.com website, and then we'll also take phone calls. I'm sure you might have a question or two with Oliver Williams. By the way, as you heard Larry Haber, the attorney, said the family moved from Florida to Nebraska. Interesting that the winner of the $365 million Powerball lottery on Saturday was from Nebraska. As Paul just emailed me, says, George, how much you want to bet that they're not native Nebraskans? I bet they're a family that relocated from Florida. You don't think John Teeter would go back and give his family the winning Powerball numbers, do you? We'll be back in a moment. Well, about 120 feet of street near Olive and Pico in Los Angeles has just sunk about 18 inches. Some oozing oil and hot water mixture has just caused the entire street to drop a foot and a half, and they don't know what's going on. That's a strange, strange story. Where would oil and water mix in like that under a street, for crying out loud? I don't think they've got a pipeline there. So we'll check in on that story as well. By the way, the interview with Larry Haber, the attorney, and John Teeter's mother, that was edited. That was condensed because there was a lag time between my question to the mother and Larry's question to her and the response back. So that's why it was tightened up, those of you who have a question about that. By the way, this is going to be the last week I'm going to be talking about very heavily the DVD and the pay-per-view that you can get right off the internet for the Predictions television show. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can watch it right off your computer, or you can get it on a DVD. Just go to www.predictions, that's with an S, predictions.tv, predictions.tv. When we come right back, we'll chat with Oliver Williams, get his take on the interview, and get your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Oliver Williams, heads up the johnteeter.com website. Oliver, the story just gets more and more intriguing, doesn't it?
George, I am stunned. You're absolutely right.
We found the attorney. He's down in Florida, as you heard, represents the family, specifically the mother, and doesn't know too much about the family. He's in the dark like so many of us. What do you think? I mean, you heard it.
Well, my first reaction, when I heard about the interview, it was very exciting, but then at the same time, it was frustrating. And now after having heard it, it seems like the closer we get to a definitive answer one way or the other, it only leads to more questions. And you have this expectation of what Larry is going to be like and what an interview with the mother would be like, and then it's completely turned on its head. It's just not at all what I expected it to be.
What I find fascinating, Oliver, is that they're real people. I don't know about John Teeter, but, the mother's real, or the person who says she's a mother. Larry Haber sounds like a very credible, reputable attorney. I have no reasons to doubt his integrity. They're real people.
Well, I started thinking about that, and if you put yourself in Larry's shoes, imagine what it must be like. Because if you do a web search for Larry Haber now, probably most of the material that comes up is about John Teeter. So imagine he's going into some big high-powered meeting. He sits down at the big desk, and all the people in the room go, "Hey, you're that time travel guy." I mean, that's got to be what his life is like. I mean, he sounded – you know what I was expecting? I was expecting somebody who's very cagey, maybe aggressive, matter of fact, somebody who's going to try to pitch a movie and tell us where to get the book and how to buy the hats and the T-shirts. And that's not the way he came off at all.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, he's got an arm's length from a lot of this.
Yeah, that surprised me too. It's almost as if he's trying to push it away. Like, no, I'm not crazy. Yeah, I represent him, but I don't know if I believe it or not. That just surprised me a little bit.
Well, and the key was the last question at the end, where he just sees this to be an incredibly strange situation. He's glad he's the attorney for it. It's fascinating for him. But it sounds like he's not even sure what's going on.
Yeah, based on what his relationship is with the family or how he describes it, that seems totally plausible to me. Again, you put yourself in his position, and what would you do if you were him? How would you react to this? And it just seemed very human, I guess.
I just love the fact that the saga continues. and the fact that there are some other players out there that are you know, part of this situation. And as I said, Oliver, it's either the greatest long-term hoax that they've concocted to last for years, but how many people think that far? Not a lot.
Well, again, I'm wondering to myself, you know, Larry must have been aware that the interview was coming. I don't know how much time he had, but I'm assuming it was, what, a couple of days?
He had a couple of weeks. No, he had a couple of weeks. He had to get it approved by the family, and he finally came back to us, and he said, look, the mother will talk. She doesn't want her voice on the radio for obvious reasons, but she will answer questions for me. And what you heard, Oliver, and what everyone else heard was the edited version of that. If I had not edited out the my question to Larry, Larry's question to the mother back to Larry, it would have been a 20-minute interview. So okay, we took all those things out, the dead air.
Okay, so right off the bat, that tells me that if it's not real, they would have had to have rehearsed that. And they would have known that's what you would have had to have done.
They did. The questions were spontaneous. Kay was on the other line with the Larry. I was talking to Larry. He had her on another phone line. I would ask him a question to get to her. He would relay it, get the response back, and then tell me.
Well, you know, I'm looking at my site now, and I, of course we're getting flooded with email about this. And one of the questions I'm seeing come up a lot, were there any questions that you asked that were not part of the interview?
No, everything I asked was there, and then we did call Larry back later and asked him if the client's name is Teeter, and he believes it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, because on the site, in the original post, John was very forward about saying that's not his real name.
That's what they're using right now.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. You know, the other thing which caught me off guard, I wasn't sure. You know, you get this image of what the mother is going to be like, and it surprised me to find out that she's terrified.
Yes.
And I guess, again, I'm trying to put myself in that person's shoes, trying to figure out, okay, how would I react if this were the case? So she had to overcome that fear just to go on the phone to talk to you through Larry.
I'm going to say what I said Friday night. This is either a genuine story of a time traveler who's come back, or it's just an elaborate hoax for something long-term, much more than the small book that she's got out and the movie or whatever they're working on. But again, who plans something like that this long?
You know, it's interesting that you should bring that up because, again, we're getting a bunch of email that's going both ways. It's A, this is so obvious that someone's doing this for money. Or B, and this is the other thing that I find interesting, is that all of this is being done for some other reason. And the example that they're giving is, whatever is in the book or in this movie or whatever is out there, that it's a message that's not meant for us, that we've been being manipulated this whole time, and that whatever John was trying to do, if he was real, has not yet come to light, that this is all part of something that he hoped would happen.
Well, and there's another part of this theory too, Oliver. I mean, here you are. You decided several years ago to begin to condense the information from the internet so people would have a steering point on John Teeter. But what if these other people attach themselves to a possibly real time traveler and they're the ones who aren't real? You know, maybe they decided this is a great story. You know, you assembled the website and you did a good job with that and you continue to monitor it. But what if the mother decided, I'm going to be the mother of John Teeter? Who's going to say no? But the whole thing that sounds very credible to me, and this is why I'm very interested in just following up with the story as long as it takes, is the attorney, Larry Haber. I trust that guy.
Well, yeah, again, he's a real guy. Go look him up on the internet.
Yep.
I mean, you know, since you brought that up, there's something else that you may be interested in knowing. There are a handful of people out there who claim to have had contact with John when he was here. And I don't know if, you know, I don't want to give out any names. One of them is, her screen name is Pamela. And if there's some way you can get a hold of her, I know she would have more insight into this than some of the
And I know you can't tell me too much on the air, but is there any more you can get to me later?
You know,
that we can try to track her down?
You know, if you think about it, George, not only is Kay listening to this interview, right? She's got to be. But
sure.
I'm sure that those people are listening to it, too.
All right, let's take some calls. They're lining up for you. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from Texas. I'm a truck driver, and my name is Jim.
Hello, Jim. Go ahead. Oliver's waiting for your question.
Okay. Actually, I have a two-part question, but the first one is the most important.
All right.
Okay. I've done a lot of research on John Titor. Titor, yeah, thank you. And I saw the picture of his time travel device.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me why it looks so much like the radio that Jeep came out with, like, back in the late 90s?
Yeah, a lot of people have come forward to say that they know what that is. It's some sort of a radiation detector, an air quality detector, or, you know, we said it's a radio for a Jeep. And nobody has been able to bring forward that picture or definitive proof that that's what it is. In fact, there's a website out there that has a standing reward for anybody that can identify that picture, and no one's been able to do it.
Hmm.
Oh, that's weird. Okay. And my second question is, what about the butterfly effect, where, you know, like they said, it was like a butterfly's wing can the flap of the wing can cause a typhoon at the other end of the world. I mean, with him coming back in time, don't you think that's going to mess up the timeline?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, if you read the post the way John describes his future, it's nothing like what's happening here. So that's one of the big questions is, was John coming back and doing what he did? Is that why we're living the future that we're living? Which sort of boggles your mind.
Oliver, what did he say about the Olympics of 2004? Because some people are saying now, because of this Olympics, that means everything he said was wrong. What did he say about the Olympics?
John said that in his time, that there were no official Olympics after 2004. Now, the two things about that are, if you've decided that, of course, this is all a story, then that's the definitive thing that you need to finalize it. But we're getting a ton of emails saying, hey, I've got a good argument that this is not the official Olympics, and then they go on to explain why. The other thing, too, is that John said a lot of other things weren't going to happen. For example, he said Y2K happened for him, and it didn't happen for us. So there's lots of examples of where John said things would be one way, and they weren't exactly that way.
What a great mystery of the mind, though, huh?
I agree.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George and Oliver.
Hi.
Hey, I was wondering, well, I have a question and a comment. Well, my question is, I was wondering if the attorney, or you, Oliver, knew how warfare technology has evolved in the future.
John commented about that a couple of times. He talked about, he talked about non-lethal weapons that were going to be developed that would end up being quite lethal. And then, of course, we had lots of stories about microwave transmitters. And then we had stories about these stun guns that are killing people. So that all happened after John said that. He talked about smaller nuclear weapons. He said that nuclear weapons would not be these huge bombs falling out of the sky, that they'd be very small, and that they would be used tactically. And, of course, we had lots of stories coming out about how the U.S. and Russia are both developing weapons along those lines. So those are two examples I can think of right off the top of my head.
Oliver, you don't think this could be a huge Hollywood scheme by any chance? I mean, would they invest 5-6 years into something like this to promote a story and then come out with it?
You know, that's an interesting idea, and I don't know if I would be mad or if I'd feel like I was part of it. But I don't see anybody having that long term of a plan. I mean, Hollywood doesn't usually act that way. Usually they put a pile of dough into something, it's done, it's over, they move on to the next thing. You don't put 8 years, you know, doing something like this. I don't know what the payoff would be.
No, nobody would invest over that long. First time caller line, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a comment as far as respective to it really, to me, doesn't matter if the Titor story would be real or created or hoaxed. I just wanted to comment on the fact that I think it's become kind of like a literature phenomenon. If you just look at the posts themselves.
Sure, you're right.
And the way the story develops, the way, true or not, that someone was able to tell a story on the Internet, include real people, it's almost like a new form of media.
Yeah, or it's a true story. I mean, yeah, that's the thing that, you know, something else came out of that interview, which I thought was interesting. Did you hear the mother's response about how John liked his job, and she said he did not.
No, he did not like what he was doing.
And I thought that was interesting, because if you fantasize about being a time traveler, a lot of people dream about that. So I thought it was interesting that John obviously did not like what he was doing very much. And I, you know, one of the big questions for me is why? What changed his mind? What was going on that he didn't like?
Even though you have monitored this website for a couple of years now, have you come to any specific opinions yourself, Oliver, about this whole situation?
You know, I go back and forth, George. Sometimes things start to happen and I lean one way, and then something will happen and I'll immediately go the other direction.
What has this interview with Larry Haber done, if anything, to this?
You know, for the last couple of months, I've been working on some stories. Not much has happened, but I think, as you said earlier, these are real people, and I was not expecting that. I was expecting a story, a show, and that's not what we got. So it just, to me, it just adds more questions, more things that we want to know.
And you know, I was impressed by the way we found him. I got to tell you, on the night you were on with me several weeks ago, we put out a call on our, you know, basically our fast blasts, and I started getting several people saying, here he is, here's his number. Here he is, here's his number. Well, there were a couple Larry Habers out there, so our producers went through all of them and found the right one.
Yeah, that's, I mean, lots of people have been trying to get a hold of him for a long time, and this is another interesting thing.
By the way, there's one in New York. It's not that yet. Larry Haber. Don't call that guy.
Since your interview has aired, of course, we've had a lot of traffic to our site. One of the sites that's been hitting us continuously has been Homeland Security.
I mean, you're kidding me.
No, the traffic from them has been absolutely
astronomical. Now, how do you know that? How do you monitor that?
Well, we have a follow site where we can go and see the stats.
Oh, and you can see the IP addresses?
Yeah, exactly. And we have been getting an incredible amount of traffic from them.
That's amazing.
But it gets more interesting. You know, of course, I have a list of websites that I go to on a routine basis just to see what the news stories are, who's talking about what. All of the websites that have been talking about Larry Haber, where Larry actually posted, have gone down. You know, they're just gone. And, Mike, I'm wondering if you've experienced anything like that. Has there been any strangeness at all after you've aired this interview?
No, but I haven't monitored that, to be honest. I haven't even checked at that. You know, I was, you know, so happy just to work with our staff in getting this interview together over the last couple days. Once it finally popped, it popped fast. And as you know, Oliver, I've been in the midst, too, of fighting whether I was going to interview a channeler for the devil. And so I've been doing this in tandem. I've decided not to do that. We're just going to let the channeler make a statement, maybe air it this week. But no, I have not tracked any of Haber's work.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if anything happens to you or if any other strangeness happens because of that.
Well, don't say happens to me, for crying out loud. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's cold in New York City.
Oh, yeah. It's typical winter now, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that over the last 90 days, I had been looking into the Teeter website very closely. And I do, there was some controversy regarding when he says the Civil War begins in this country in the year 2005. If you look at the FISA violations with regard to the domestic spying, that actually could be the touchstone that could create a revolt. But also, the other thing that impressed me the most was the IBM computer that could read the old code.
Right, the 5100.
Correct. Now, also, I saw on Friday night on Charlie Rose the Donald Rumsfeld interview, where Donald Rumsfeld was talking about providing very quick, real-time intelligence to individuals in the field. And DARPA and three defense contractors received huge billion-dollar grants to, I guess, connect all of the military computers with the Department of Defense. Some of the machines are very old. Others are very new supercomputers. But they have a problem communicating. That, you know, Rumsfeld's explanation and his, I guess, enthusiasm with regard to this new technology applied to the battlefield sort of got me thinking about that IBM computer thing. But I wanted to say this, that what seems to make sense with regard to his possible origins of a civil war, a new civil war that will rip the country apart, could be the domestic spying and the violations within the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act.
Well, very, very astute of you to point that out. Oliver, we're out of time, but obviously we're going to continue to follow up on what could very well be one of the strangest, most incredible stories we've stumbled into for a long time, huh?
Thank you, George.
All right, Oliver Williams. He heads up the johnteter.com website, and it's spelled T-I-T-O-R. I'll be back in a moment. We're going ghost hunting, so get ready for this Coast to Coast ride.